The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. The Commission on Narcotic Drugs held another set of intersessional meetings in November, but first...
In the studio with me today, it is a thrill and a pleasure and a real honor. I have... you're an actor, you're a musician, you're a comedian, you're... But more to the
writer.
Point of being a writer, I can't forget that.
Book. Broadway singer.
A true Renaissance
man. A dancer.
Man.
And
I'd have to see
a
that.
A petty thief. So make sure your watch is on when I leave.
I take them off for just such an occurrence.
Belushi's coming. Keep your watches in your pocket.
He's also a farmer, of all things, and a businessman. And you haven't already guessed, that's Jim Belushi over there.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
So the reason I got you here is that you're now up here in Oregon. I shouldn't say that you're now up here in Oregon. Let's back up. You have a place down in Eagle Point.
Yes, Eagle Point, right on the Rogue River. About 5-6 years ago, I purchased from the Elks Club, the old Elks picnic grounds along the river. And it's a picnic grounds. I mean, they have baseball, you know, little baseball field, stage, barbecue, right on the river, swing set. But I think those guys got a little older, and I don't think they recruit very well. But they sold it to me, and I kind of refurbished it. Not kind of. I totally refurbished it and built a beautiful house on it. And I still let the Elks use it when they want. And the Cattlemen's Association comes and uses it. And people in Eagle Point, they say, oh, you got the old Elks picnic grounds. Everybody has partied there over the last 40 years. But yeah, I purchased that. And I'm so happy on the river. I'm just so happy. And then the farm came up behind me for sale, and I bought it, 80 acres. So I have 93 acres on the Rogue River in Eagle Point. And I have cattle on it that I lease for nominal fee to a neighbor. And I was like, well, what am I going to do with the farm? And recreational marijuana passed. And I went, well, it's the new agriculture. So I started the grow about 3 years ago, 48 plant grow. And then I upped it last year to a light depth. And this year I'm in it. I am rolling. We are producing great weed, great numbers, great quality, light depth. We feed it with the Rogue River water from the mountains. It's got almost a perfect pH for the plant. And the sun down there in the banana belt is just a magical spiritual place to grow.
Yeah, the terroir. Or I can't pronounce words.
I can't pronounce it either, but the terroir, yeah.
Yeah, it's yes. Brilliant.
Tour. Well, you know, it's interesting that this banana belt is in the same parallel as Burgundy and Bordeaux. We're talking about tour, you know. From a little above me all the way down to Napa is that gorgeous stretch of earth that circles our earth. That just grows beautiful wine, marijuana, pears, grapes.
So now you've gotten into the business. You have your own brand. Well, you're an entertainer, so you are a brand.
Well, yeah.
But your cannabis has a brand.
Yeah. I didn't put my name on it for 2 years because to me it was. That's Oregon, and I understand Oregon. I took right to it. And it's just a little more organic here and a little more real compared to I live in L.A., you know. So I didn't really put my name on it at all when I sold it last year in the Rogue's Lair Farms. Then I visited about 25 dispensaries and spent a couple hours in each. And people were like, oh, wow. Oh, this is yours. So I kind of hid behind the product. I thought I should lead with the product first instead of leading with my name. But this year I'm so proud of the product and I feel really sure-footed that I branded it Belushi's Private Vault. And releasing it this fall. It's in dispensaries now, like in Nectar and Chalice and Hot Box on the East. And I'm very excited. We're having really good numbers and good results.
Tell me about some of your strains. You've got one in particular that I remember you talking about it at the International Cannabis Business Conference that's really popular with vets.
Yes.
Black Diamond?
Black Diamond. Yeah, the Black Diamond OG. I wanted to do kind of a grassroots understanding, and that's why I did all these dispensary visits all over the state. And I got to meet a lot of vets. And there was three in particular, but one that I'll tell you about on the coast who said he was a medic in Iraq, and he'd seen things to happen in the human body that nobody should ever witness. And he said his PTSD was so bad. And he looked a little shaky with me, and his eyes kind of teared up. And he said he's got three children and a wife that he can't talk to, and he can't sleep. And he said the Black Diamond OG was the only strain that he could talk to his children again and sleep. And he hugged me. And I was so moved. But I said, but I didn't make it. And he goes, no, but you're the steward. So I was like, wow, man. And to be honest with you, from that moment on, I've changed into another whole place. This experience with cannabis in Oregon has pushed me through so many spiritual changes and consciousness and about myself and about our responsibility in the world. So, and there are other gentlemen and one woman that I met that like the Black Diamond OG for their PTSD. Chocolate hashberry, I won't smoke because it's I have a low tolerance. That'll put you right on the couch. I got this other strain, and I really like two strains. Cherry pie, which I call the marriage counselor. I use that before I like talk to my wife at the end of the day. You know, she may have a glass of wine. I'll take a little hit of cherry pie. Because usually the fight is, are you hungry? Yeah. Where do you want to go? What do you want to eat? What do you have a taste for? Well, I'd like to have a cheeseburger. No, cheeseburger's too heavy. Well, how about some sushi? I love that little place on Sautel. Oh, I had sushi with my mother last night. And usually my reaction is, well, don't ask me what I want when you know we're going to go where you want. But after the cherry pie, it's like, baby, you know, we can go to Taco Bell as long as you're sitting across from me. And she's like, wow, you're being charming. And I go, am I? So she doesn't even know I took the hit. And it's THC is like a 19, although we just had some that tested really high. I don't know what it was about that one greenhouse, but man. But it's got about 4% terpene in it. So there's really a great entourage effect. So there's no paranoia on it. It's mellow. You can handle yourself. And like I said, I have a low tolerance of that. And a Blue Dragon. Blue Dragon keeps me like clean and clean thinking and being able to speak and function in the world. And then we got, like I said, chocolate hashberry that'll knock you out. Snowman cookies is another really high THC. That I won't try. But we have, and I have a new set of strains coming out in the second cycle that were created by Jeffrey Iverson. He's got an award-winning Nilla wafer. He's been growing. He's got a mentor in San Francisco that he's been working with for 25 years. And, wow, man, he is a breeder. And this is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff. Lemon chiffon, Nilla wafer, a pre-Bubba Kush 98. That'll come out in the second cycle.
Excellent. I'm encouraged to know that you're doing some strains that aren't the totally high THC. I mean, that was when it was illegal. That was how this all. I did this in the 80s when the crackdown started, and so we couldn't import across from Mexico. So the domestic market began. The domestic production began, and of course you want to get the maximum bang for your buck. So you know as strong as you can. Oh, this stuff will just knock you down. Oh, and they just kept going for this higher and higher THC thing. And you still see this with dabs, but on the medical side, you get a lot more people who understand that it's a lot more than just the THC, and there's all these things, and then you've got the specific conditions that they're going for. And I'm just really glad to know that you're looking at a whole plant.
Oh yes. I mean, you know, it's like they say, you don't want to go in a liquor store and give me the highest alcohol, right? That's 130 proof. I mean, you know, you want a wine that's got a 14 to 16% alcohol content. Same thing with marijuana. I want a strain that's got a 15 to 17% THC, but a 2 to 4% terpenes. And the terpenes, I love to see the breakdowns on that because I know the breakdowns of my strains. And my strains, two in particular, have very high myrcene. And the myrcene terpene, you know, thins out the cellular wall in the brain to allow the CBD and the THC to kind of penetrate better. So the entourage effect is actually you're getting higher, but in a controlled way. Look, you know, we need to manage. It's medicine. You want to take, you know, a 100 milligram candy bar when you are 500 milligrams when you are in your father is in his bed in hospice, and, you know, they got him on opiates, and he can't talk to you. You want to get him on the candy bar so he can be comfortable and still converse to the last day. You know, that kind of medicine. But most people need medicine, and everybody turns to alcohol for medicine. And alcohol destroys families, kills people, women get beaten. I don't know any women that have gotten beaten from a guy, from a pothead, unless he's mixing it with a lot of alcohol. But, I mean, we're peaceful people, but we need our medicine, and it's safe medicine. It takes whatever trauma we've experienced in our life, whether it's somebody in your family that grew up with a disease that hurt the family because they didn't know how to deal with it. PTSD can destroy a family. A death, divorce, all these kind of traumas. Our endocannabinoids are rushing signals between each other. And when you put these cannabinoids in you, it can slow that down. It's medicine. It's beautiful.
That was an interview with Jim Belushi. BelushiSFarm.com is the website for Belushi's Farm. That's Jim Belushi's cannabis farm. And, of course, Jim Belushi is also an actor, comedian, musician, and a lot of other stuff. Truly a renaissance man. You are listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Now to that Commission on Narcotic Drugs meeting. In November 7th through 9th, they held another set of intersessional meetings. One of the people who was there to present at this CND meeting is a good friend and colleague, Peter Sorosi, with the Rights Reporter Foundation and Drug Reporter.
I would like to thank you, Madam Chair, and the Civil Society Task Force for giving me this opportunity to take account of drug-related crisis which is happening in my region, Central Eastern Europe. This crisis is actually not only caused by drug use itself, but by bad drug policies based on the faulty assumption that we can make societies drug-free by punishing people for using drugs instead of helping them to stay healthy and alive. In my region, most injecting drug users belong to marginalized groups of society. For example, most of them are homeless and they belong to ethnic minorities. It is important to understand that for these people, harm reduction programs such as needle and syringe programs are not only one choice in the menu of services. They are not only one step to road to recovery, but harm reduction programs actually for them are sometimes the only chance to stay alive and to be treated with respect as human beings. And during the early years of 2000s of the 21st century, in our region, a comprehensive system of care and support was being built, including harm reduction, and we had made a huge progress in letting access to these services for people. Unfortunately, I have to report that in recent years, most of these harm reduction services and this system has been collapsing in most countries of the region due to the retreat of international donors, such as the Global Fund, and also because of lack of funding and support from member states. Now, the UNGAS document, which was adopted in 2016, required member states to provide access to HIV prevention services to injecting drug users in accordance with the WHO's technical guidelines. But since 2016, in most countries of the region, what we see is not progress, but decline in access to these services. And now coverage to harm reduction services actually qualifies as extremely low in terms of the of these technical guidelines. Sadly, this is a typical example of failed international investment when the commitment of member states could not be translated into action, and inaction leads to deaths and suffering. My organization, the Rights Reporter Foundation, specializes on making movies, documentary movies, and we are posting them online on our website, Drug Reporter. And we have filmed this crisis in many countries, including Russia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, and other countries. In recent years, in almost all of these countries, we saw that life-saving services has been shut down because of lack of funding. And we also filmed how, as a consequence, HIV and hepatitis C epidemics broke out. And I could show you graphs of the rising rates of HIV and hepatitis in these countries, but actually the graphs don't show the whole picture. By making movies about these people, we could see the human stories of suffering in shanty towns and ghettos of our cities. Now, the international drug control system was created first and foremost to promote public health. But most of the injecting drug users we interviewed in our movies have never been given the same choice to make healthy decisions about their lives as most of us in this room. Most of these people were born in deep poverty. They are dealing with multiple social and psychological issues, from unemployment to childhood traumas. They are the living proof that the moral failure of our societies to treat everyone with the same respect. So it's important to understand that harm reduction is not the opposite of abstinence. It is not the opposite of recovery. It is actually about supporting people where they are at as fellow citizens who need help, and treating them with respect, not as problems to be solved, but part of the solution. By producing films about these people, we came to realize that many of these people, that abstinence for many of these people is not a real choice. When you try to force someone who is living on the street to quit immediately drug use, it is like asking someone who has one leg to ride a bicycle, or to force someone, a traveler, to give up his hat in the desert. Repressive policies based on the idea of fighting war against drugs are actually pushing these people deeper into a vicious circle of poverty and drug use. They don't need sermons, they don't need judgment. What they really need is pragmatic support from us to stay healthy and to survive, and they need where they are at. So unless we bring harm reduction services to people where they are at, our investment into recovery and treatment can be also wasted, because without harm reduction, the road to recovery is a road that is leading nowhere. It is like a stairway without steps. The dream of a drug-free society may be a very positive idea for many people, but when people are denied access to life-saving services in the name of this dream, it can be a nightmare for these people. Some people say that we have a funding crisis for harm reduction in my region. I don't agree with this notion. I think we have a funding crisis when governments don't have the money to deal with a problem. But in our case, we have the money and the resources, but most governments decide or choose to spend this money on law enforcement, on punishing people to ease their pain. We spend billions on arresting, prosecuting, and imprisoning people. Now, harm reduction programs cost a very small fraction of that money which we spend on law enforcement, and they produce very positive effects. So I would like to urge all member states to quit dependence on repressive drug policies and instead invest and use their resources to keep people healthy and alive.
That was Peter Cerosi with the Rights Reporter Foundation and Drug Reporter Project speaking to the Commission on Narcotic Drugs. Now, let's hear from Brun Gonzalez Aguiar, the chair of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs.
Drug policies cannot continue to be debated and developed without meaningful participation of those most directly impacted by drug policies, that is, people who use drugs. The outcome document ratified by member states reaffirms a commitment to the, I quote, comprehensive, far-reaching, and people-centered set of universal and transformative goals and targets, which is embodied in the 2030 Sustainable Development Goals, signaling an unprecedented shift towards ensuring that public health development and human rights concerns do not remain peripheral, but are prioritized and become central to all policy development. We celebrate the commitment in paragraph 4 of the outcome document to work towards drug policies that respect human rights, fundamental freedoms, and the inherent dignity of all individuals, including people who use drugs and who are negatively impacted by the current criminalizing and stigmatizing paradigm. Monitoring and evaluation mechanisms for the implementation of the commitments made to jointly address and counter the world drug problem are fundamental. We look forward to working collaboratively with all agencies, notably those with mandates respectful of human rights. The international community should recognize that existing punitive drug policies fuel violence and unrest and threaten democracies, welfare, and well-being for all. Going forward, drug policies should instead seek to reduce violence, strengthen governance, strengthen community systems, the rule of law, and promote the well-being of society at large and those who are at most marginalized and vulnerable. If we truly are now preparing to take stock of progress made...
The interpreters kindly request the speaker to please slow down.
We need to stop harmful policies that rely on prohibition through criminalization. Continuing the war on drugs means a continuation of militarization along with armed confrontation and disproportionate spending on security enforcement and supply reduction strategies. These not only fail to achieve their goals, but are also at the expense of establishing and promoting peaceful and just communities and societies. Prohibitionist models and drug-free objectives actively undermine the Sustainable Development Goals agenda, determined to foster peaceful, just, and inclusive societies which are free from fear and violence. reading so that all human beings can fulfill their potential in dignity and equality and in a healthy environment. In other words, and I quote, there can be no sustainable development without peace and no peace without sustainable development. Drug-free objectives are not only unrealistic, they are dangerous and harmful. They are used to justify widespread human rights violations and an overly punitive approach that directly undermines health, development, peace, and security. It is people who use drugs that are most directly and severely impacted, as drug-free objectives contradict and interfere with the rights of autonomy, self-determination, and the free development of the individual. The Sustainable Development Goals principle on partnership tells us that further steps should be based on a spirit of strengthened global solidarity, focused in particular on the needs of the poorest and most vulnerable, and with the participation of all countries, all stakeholders, and all people. Current drug policies undermine Sustainable Development Goal number 3, to ensure healthy lives and promote well-being for all at all ages. It's not, the presentation is not working. So, goal 3, to ensure healthy lives and promote well-being for all at all ages. Goal number 10, to reduce inequality within and amongst countries, is also undermined, as is goal 16, to promote peaceful and inclusive societies for sustainable development, provide access to justice for all, and build effective, accountable, and inclusive institutions at all levels. Paragraph 8 of the Declaration of the 2030 Agenda reads, "We envision a world of universal respect for human rights and human dignity, the rule of law, justice, equality, and non-discrimination, of respect for race, ethnicity, and cultural diversity, and of equal opportunity permitting the full realization of human potential and contributing to shared prosperity, a world which invests in its children and in which every child grows up free from violence and exploitation, a world in which every woman and girl enjoys full gender equality and all legal, social, and economic barriers to their empowerment have been removed, a just, equitable, tolerant, open, and socially inclusive world in which the needs of the most vulnerable are met. This should be used to guide decision-making in drug policy development. Right now, in many different countries around the planet, our communities are still subject to actions that directly undermine progress toward achieving sustainable development goals, which include compulsory detention centers that use torture and or forced and unpaid labor in the name of treatment, death penalty for drug offenses, and open promotion of violence targeting people who use drugs, an epidemic of preventable drug overdose deaths that grows each year."
That was Brun Gonzalez Aguiar, chair of the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, addressing the Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria, on November 8th. For now, that's it. I want to thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.